fantastic number of people that I send emails out to. And if you got my email, I sent this one out. And I left place over here on both sides to write on. That's why I got those clipboards. So if you want to write anything as I'm going through here, and I'll just stop whenever I get to the place where I think it's appropriate, and we can just pick up again, because next time I'm on this particular night. this is, we're coming up very quickly to the time when the war is going to break out over there between Israel and the Islamic world. And I have many times told people when they said it was going to break out over there that they were doing it too quick. And I've always tried to keep ahead of it by picking a period of maybe 4 years where I thought it would occur on down the road. Then as we got close to it and I examined other things, I'd say, well, you know what? I think it's going to occur in the latter portion of that or before that. Because I've always been honest. Can't tell exactly when. But I will say that I've gotten a lot more certain on the timing over the last 10 years than I've ever had before. Now, this is a judgment visit by God on the earth. The church won't have to go through the wrath part of it. But when that sixth seal is open, I call this now to Armageddon. And we are now in a period of time where all the elements of the beginning of sorrows, which is the time of the breakout of the war over there, and the time of the earthquakes and famines and pestilences, reaching an accelerated crash at the same time that the war begins. And I think that will happen on the opening of the sixth seal. That's what we're waiting for to open. All the elements of the red horse, the black horse, the pale horse, they're all increasing, every one of them. And so are all the elements of the beginning of sorrows. They're working together. And it's going to be a while before that sixth seal opens. I don't think it's going to open until Obama leaves office. And I really doubt if it opens before the before 2 years after his leaving. In other words, in the first 2 years of the next administration, I think it's likely to occur in that two-year period. Now, is this generation ready for a three-woe judgment visit of the Lord? Remember, the first woe is the opening of the bottomless pit. Hei kleis tou phriatos tais abyssou, when all those horrible creatures come up out of the earth. The second woe is this great spiritual army, 1,000 of men come across the Tigris Euphrates River. And then all of a sudden, now all that's happening over there. I'm not trying to make you feel good about us not being that affected. I would tell you like it was, if it was otherwise. But I really think that the bulk of God's judgment is going to come down on what was the known world at the time John wrote the book of Revelation. And I seriously doubt if our war problems over here are anything to be compared with the war events that are going to happen over there in the Holy Land. And I don't think this sixth seal is going to open for a while, because as I have read and understood it, the Antichrist will arise. We'll know who he is by the time after the second seal opens. or the sixth seal opens. But I don't think he'll be fully exposed, and he's going to have a lot of work to do to get the Sunnis, the Shiite, and the Alawites, the Safalists, the Islamic Jihad, the Temple Jihad, and the ISIS all together. It's going to be a monstrous task. And I don't think he would be able to do it unless God put it in their hearts to unite with him. And I think that's basically what God is telling us over where they're getting ready to launch the initial attack and then the final attack. It's not easy to supervise a bunch of wild asses. And that's what Ishmael's descendants, Ishmael was a wild ass. That's what the Bible says. And well named, because all of his descendants, those Arabs, and the other different branches that broke off of the Arabs, they are like a bunch of wild men. And I use that word asses because that's what the Bible calls, and that's the most appropriate name I can find for them. I've been around them a long time, and I've got some friends that are Islamic, but I'll guarantee you that once the Antichrist conquers Egypt, he'll bypass Israel and the Negev, and once he bypasses Egypt and conquers that, and he will, then you're going to have all those nations starting to Let him know by wire and by communication, we want to be a part of your caliphate. And all the kings and the princes and the different ones that are rulers over those countries, their own people hate them. And they're going to be all prepared to jump on a royal plane and take off for some country, probably America. But in any case, I don't think we're going to have any real problem over here as far as the major bulk of the fighting and things like that occur. But we will have a lot of problem here with earthquakes in the central part of the United States, over across the Rockies, off the coastline of and in the interior of the coastal range. I've been to every volcano over there, started off with the first one at the top, and had a man who's familiar with them take me all the way down to the last one at I went to Mount Shasta, and then I went on down to the last one down there a couple of years later. But I've looked at that. I've looked at the structures. I've talked to geologists about it out there, and I don't even tell them that I am trying to do this for Bible, or they won't talk to me most of the time. But this stuff is coming to a head right now, and so we've got Isaiah 29:6, written 700 years before the birth of Christ. As a meteorologist and as a geologist, I was startled the first time I read this. You could not have put together a better scenario of a massive movement of the tectonic plates than what Isaiah wrote 700 years before the birth of Christ. It is perfect. And I was amazed. But the more I studied about how God used the tectonic plates and has used them in the past, the more grateful I became for this particular thing in Isaiah, because it doesn't leave any doubt in my mind that this is a massing movement of the tectonic plates, especially when he tells us in Revelation that every island and every mountain is going to start to be moved out of its place on the opening of the sixth seal. And that by the end of the tribulation, on the pouring out of the last vial, they have all been moved out of their geographical and latitudinal longitudes. And that's exactly what it says. And there's only one way that can be done. And only God can do it. And God made the earth, and he has been shifting these plates for a very long time. And he will have a massive shifting. We may even have a a reversal of the polar caps. That's happened in history several times. God owns, operates, and controls the whole show. Now, the thing I have always tried to get across to people is that, what does this do for me? Man, I don't have any doubt. I mean, I don't have any doubt that that's what it's talking about. You say, well, you can't expect us to not have some doubt. If you had been with me in all these places, you'd have the same information I had, and you would have seen it with your own eyes. And so I never get irritated with people at churches that don't believe me. And I always try to cover it in great detail over a week's period. I used to do 3 weeks lectures. And to make sure they understood, this is not something that is opinion. It's something that only God could have known in 700 B.C. This is something spiritual, because I know what it means, and I know who wrote it, and I know that it's precise, it's concise, it's exactly what's going to happen. And if you look at the opening of the sixth seal, that's when all this stuff's going to begin. When you get to the Lord of Hosts, the Lord of Hosts is the pre-incarnate Christ. You say, is there any doubt in your mind? Absolutely not. And I just got through finished telling you in the other place that that's taught and still taught in some graduate seminaries. But it was taught in all seminaries and by all preachers that I am familiar with before 1860. They taught that. And to me, it is perfectly obvious in the Bible. But when the evangelical movement began under John Wesley, who withdrew out of the Church of England and began the evangelical movement, and so many people followed him, and the ones that followed him were people that believed you could lose your salvation. At that time, the Baptists didn't follow him. But these churches in the evangelical movement begin to have great meetings, great spiritual emotion, raising of hands, clapping of hands, even dancing, and speaking in tongues. And they believed that there was a special tongue that only angels could understand, and they believed they could speak in an angelic tongue. But you've been taught about that all your life. It's a lie. But people weren't that interested in knowing Christ as someone who has an inheritance waiting for them in heaven. And in those movements was born the expression, they're in a better place. I don't doubt that they may have had that before, but it really intensified. He's in a better place, she's in a better place. That was about their total knowledge of heaven. It was a better place, because they didn't want to teach about this heavenly city, and they didn't really understand the millennial reign, and most of them didn't even believe in a millennial reign. A lot of our preachers don't know that. They don't know it because they won't go back there and research it and study it. When the Bible says, study to show thyself of and proved unto God, a workman that needeth not to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth, I've gone back and studied Greek myths. I've gone back and studied everything that had to do with that. Why? I figured out that God was real and that he's true and everything he says is right. I also figured out that there had been translations that could have been made a lot clearer. And so once I began to discover this, I could do it even though people didn't agree with it. And I told a group last night, and I'll repeat it again tonight because I think it's important. Now, I'm going to quit on here whenever I get to a certain point. This church is prepared for the coming events. Who prepared them? God. Who do you use to do it? Preachers that wanted to know the truth. And who have studied the Bible. And he said, take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly in heart, and you shall find rest unto your souls. Preachers that don't think of themselves as being important anymore, but have an attitude of a kind of a small child toward Christ. And God has prepared you by your own self-study, by your own desire to know the truth, and you're prepared. You say, well, what makes us prepared? You know the truth. What about all those people that have come here and left because they didn't like this kind of teaching? Am I mad at them? God forbid. I love every one of them. I really do. And what about those people that came a couple of times and never came back? I pray for every one of them all the time. And they're prepared. You say, why are they prepared? Because they've heard it. And to disagree with something, you have to know what you heard. And they didn't want to believe it. And they left. Used to hurt my feelings, but I'm not a big wasp anymore. Little wasps have to be careful or they get stomped on. But so do big ones. The big ones always make a bigger mess. But in any case, they're prepared. Because when it starts happening, they'll know why they disagreed with this. That's why I don't ever get discouraged. I used to get discouraged all the time. They're just not believing it. But I didn't realize that God was preparing them. And my job was to teach the truth. And if you teach the truth, and you tell people exactly what's going to happen, and they don't believe it, they're still prepared. Because when it does start, they're going to get back in church. I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't start coming over here. But I don't keep up with attendance. When I first came up here, we had 9 people, so why should I keep up with attendance? We grew. People that were interested in the Word stayed. People that weren't left. Very simple formula. I don't bear a grudge to any of them. None of them. Now he says, for nation shall rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines and pestilence and earthquakes in divers places. All these are the beginning of sorrows. They're getting worse and worse and worse. But the sixth seal hasn't opened yet because it has some things in it that involve something that Luke talked about. Revelation 6, 7 through 11. And when he had opened the fourth seal, I heard the voice of the fourth beast say, come and see. Well, you've had 2 horses before him. First a red horse, which was war. And then the second one, which was hunger, which was a black horse. And his name that sat on him was Death. And hell followed with him. And power was given unto them. Whenever you see the word them, what you're supposed to do is look back up above it and find a predecessor for it. Some people call them predecessors. Some people call them connectors. But who is this that get the power? Well, they get the power from these horses. The color of it designates what the power is to do. And power was given to them, 4 horses. Those 4 horses are the red one, the pale one, not the pale one, but the hunger one, the black one, and the pale one, the death. And then the next seal, the fifth seal, are a bunch of people that are going to be martyred in the tribulation period. And the martyring is already occurring, but you're going to see a lot more of it when that next seal opens, the sixth seal. Now, when it says the fourth part, it says 4 horses over the fourth part of the earth. I've told you many times, Hal Lindsey said that meant a fourth of the world's population is going to be slaughtered at this time. That is not true. Because if you will look up the word geis, which is the word that is given for earth, it refers to a a territory part of the earth, the land surface of the earth, a large piece of the earth, a large territory of the earth. It is not talking about the whole earth, and as such, it does not mean all over the earth. If you added them all together, it would be a fourth of the world population. Now, I am convinced that this major part of this will occur in the old world. And I wouldn't teach the seventh trumpet rapture if I was... I'd try to soft soap it if I wasn't a God-called preacher, so that people would say, well, I don't have anything to worry about. So you can't look at this and say, well, he just wants us to know we can get out of here quickly. That isn't the truth at all. He says, I sow under the altar the souls of them that were slain for the word of God and for the testimony which they held. Now, there's a bunch of them already up there, but there's going to be a much more of them join them. And if you were up there right now among these people that were martyred up until this time, up until God took them up, and they cried with a loud voice, saying, how long, O Lord, holy and true, dost thou not judge and avenge our blood on them that dwell on the earth? And white robes were given unto every one of them, and it was said unto them they should rest yet for a little season. So the little season, they're going to have to stay up there and wait until their fellow servants get up there, until their fellow servants also and their brethren that should be killed as they were should be fulfilled. That's going to start to be fulfilled intensely when they open the sixth seal. I mean, it's going to go bonkers. You're going to see people killed all over the place. You're going to see Israel's population slaughtered as they push Israel into the Negev. You're going to see all kind of martyrs. And a lot of the Israelis will believe at that time. And a lot of them will die as they're driven into the Negev. So that's God's going to have to work all that out, and he'll do it himself. But he does tell you that's what's going to happen with these simple verses. Now, the preachers before 1760 were well educated at that time. And they all went to Bible colleges, and a lot of them went to universities and colleges, and they were very intelligent men. But when it came to the Bible, they tried to get the simplest explanation they could find. And quite frankly, that's just the way God wrote it. And afterwards, other people who wanted to refute what they had taught began to try to pick holes in it. What was it they called them? Oh, Lord, I'm getting old. There were the critics. They began to have all kind of critic speakers, and they began to write all kind of critical books. High critical. And they tried to destroy everything they'd written. But these men were right. Although they weren't perfect. Who is perfect except Jesus? Beginning of sorrows and seals, 2 to 5, seals 2 to seal 5, they're intensifying right now. Both of them, it's happening right now. You can pick up your paper, you can watch your television, they're all intensifying. Lava's flowing in areas it hadn't flown before. They just did a thing on the comet that I talked about. I told you a long time ago all the elements that were in it, and nobody knew. Nobody knew. And I told them exactly what was in there, because the things that they described had a certain chemical element in them that made them do what they do. And I was teaching chemistry at the time, and I went through there and I studied and I wrote out all the things that were in there. First time they ran one up and got on one, that's exactly what was in there. Plus a couple of others that were poison that I didn't pick up on. And now they run into one. I just put it on the internet today. And they just passed through one. And side one. And they said that it's smelled like rotten eggs. They said it was the most horrible thing they had ever smelled. And they were able to measure the ingredients that are inside, the elements, like on a periodic chemistry chart. And they said, whenever this thing comes down to Earth, it's going to stink up a large, not Halley's, but whatever this, whenever a comet, any comet comes down and strikes the Earth, it's going to stink up a large portion of the earth. Now, I don't think the comet is going to land in the Atlantic. I think the comet is going to land in the Mediterranean Sea. And I think those people over there are in serious trouble in Europe, in North Africa, and on across into the Middle East and Russia and that area. I think that's where it's coming down. You say, well, that doesn't say that in the Bible. I know. But too many of these things that they say are going to happen are meant for that area because that is where all this heresy started. That is where all this spiritual adultery started. That is where the devil has been fighting against God and his people ever since he called them out of Egypt. And it has been a hellhole for every generation. So, World War I, World War II, all the fighting between the different nations over there in the time of the Bible, all that bloodshed, all that heresy, all the fighting between the devil and the children of God and between God's disciples and the devil and the devil's seat sitting over there on the northern Euphrates, and the Bible, it says all this. So while it doesn't say it, I sure do think it's logical. And I've got, to me, it's good news. I don't look forward to being martyred, and I don't look forward to having a comet come down on the United States. Because, quite frankly, compared to that part of the world, we're just little Lord Fauntleroys, good boys. And so I don't expect to have the same kind of horror here that we have there. I expect earthquakes. I expect a large death toll. But I do not expect what's going to happen over there. Now, is this generation ready for the three woe judgment visit of the Lord? Revelation 6:12. Well, it's 5 minutes till. If you will give me back those sheets. Oh, you've already written on. I got some more.